everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. And once again, my guest is Bradley Coates, and he is the managing partner of Coates & Fry. This is the largest divorce law firm in Honolulu, where I used to live. And, you know, I used to be on the air in Hawaii for actually 5 years. The first time I met Brad Coates was in 1999, when the first edition of his wonderful book, Divorce with Decency, had just been published. So I sought him out. He agreed to come on my radio show then. And the rest is history, because Brad and I are friends. He has a great sense of humor. One of the things about his book, which is now in its fourth edition, is that sprinkled throughout are all kinds of ha-has. I'm just going to give you three of them, and then we're going to get Brad on the air, I'm thinking. So here's three of the funnies in his book, and anytime we have to learn something, it helps to do it with some humor. So here are three of them. Whoever thinks marriage is a 50-50 proposition doesn't know the half of it. And then Louis Gizzard said, I don't think I'll get married again. I'll just find a woman I don't like and give her a house. And finally, Zaza Gabor said, I'm a marvelous housekeeper. Every time I leave a man, I leave his house. Bradley Coates, are you there on the line?
I am here. I'm here. I don't know if I can compare to Zsa Gabor, but I'm here.
We wouldn't want you to compare with Zsa Gabor. Anyway, you're calling from paradise, and I miss Hawaii so often.
And Hawaii misses you, Dr. Diana.
Thank you, Bradley. You're... book, Divorce with Decency, is now in its fourth edition, and today we're going to talk about some of what you added to your fourth edition, which is, and I love this very long title, A Divorce Lawyer's Spreadsheet, A Social Demographic and Economic Analysis of the Changing Faces of Love, Romantic Relationships, Marriage and Divorce in Modern Day America. And Brad, you wrote about this kind of not only with your lawyer's hat on, but your sociologist's hat on.
Yeah, actually, society's changing faster than the laws are changing. So as I've gone through writing four editions of this Divorce with Decency book, it's actually more society that's worth commentating on. The divorce laws are still pretty much the meat axe down the middle, 50-50. That hasn't changed. So, but what has dramatically changed is society, and in particular, just in the last 10 years, 5 to 10 years, it's been an amazing sort of switch, and every time I rewrite this book, I got to bring it up to date. So that's sort of what I did with the seven mega trends of the new millennium, and I can go through them whenever you're ready.
Well, yeah, I think we should go through them. They should be very interesting for our listeners, and you know, I was just looking at my copy of your first edition, because as I was sharing with the listening audience, we go back to the first edition together. And it's really true. It says on the back of the book, social workers, psychologists, psychiatrists, and other professionals will find it a useful and concise reference. It really is. I continue to work with people who are separating and looking at divorce. And since I was trained in divorce mediation, while I don't do it formally now, I think that your book is a great reference, and I've referred so many of my clients to the book. The subtitle of Brad's book, Divorce with Decency, is The Complete How-To Handbook and Survivor's Guide to the Legal, Emotional, and Economic and Social Issues. You like long titles, Brad, but you got to get it all in, right?
I'm a lawyer. I get paid by the word.
Yes. So... now, you spoke about this topic yesterday to a group of women. Before we launch into the content, can you tell us a little bit about what that was like yesterday for you?
Well, it was about 50 wahine. Hawaiian for a woman is wahine, as you know, but maybe your audience doesn't.
Yeah, and
so
I'm
when
really
I say,
glad you defined that, because I know you you often say wahine, and some of our, you know, we're heard in many, many countries around the world. So, again, we'll
people
say wahine is
head.
Woman.
Anyway, yes. the wahinis oftentimes are more interested in some of the touchy-feely aspects of relationships than the guys are. And these were bean-counting CPA wahinis, so they were sort of, they were real linear, but they were also emotional. It was pretty funny. They really enjoyed the talk, and I think it's a, I think it's an interesting one for anybody. What I did for them is I talked about, like I say, these seven mega trends of the new millennium. And if I can just toss them out real quickly, here are the major new trends. And people have always had little snippets of these, but these are really dramatically changing trends. Just within the like I say, since I wrote the last book, which has only been the last 5 years. First one, the women's movement and the rise of what they call the she economy. Second one, cohabitation, sort of a preference, modern day preference for just living together without benefit of clergy. Three, social media and the internet dramatically impacting relationships. Four, the proliferation of pornography, having probably a more negative impact on some relationships. Civil unions, the rise of the civil unions that were originally intended, or created basically as in response to pressure from homosexuals to have basically a quasi-marital status. But, you know, once it's granted to the homosexuals, it can be, it's available to heterosexuals as well. And a lot of people see it as a more sort of relaxed form of a linkage, partnership linkage. And in Europe, they've become almost more popular than conventional marriage because they've been around a little bit longer. So it's now an option that's available to heterosexuals too. Kind of a, you know, it's almost like nobody's really thought through the consequences of that, but that's going to be a game changer for society.
Sure.
And then what they call gray divorces. Divorces amongst aging baby boomers, folks 50 and older getting divorced with increasing regularity, which didn't used to be the case. And then there's sort of a smart-ass sociologist that's predicting the, quote, end of marriage sometime between 2028 and 2034. This guy named Charles Martel is predicting that marriage is gonna be over. Between 2028 and 2034, the U.S. marriage rate will reach zero. So I'm not sure that I'm totally by that prediction, but it's interesting the factors that he raises. So any one of these topics could be enough for probably a whole talk on the radio, but I'll let you pick which one you want to talk about first.
Well, I think we ought to go with your first one. And I have so that would be the women's movement and the rise of the she economy. I think the first three, actually, cohabitation being the second one, and the third one about the internet and porn and unrealistic sex expectations. And, of course, I've got some observations about that, too, so we can have a little interaction. The women's movement, the rise of the she economy, the cover story in the current Atlantic magazine is Why Women Still Can't Have It All by Anne-Marie Slaughter. And that's gotten a lot of attention. She's a Princeton professor who was in the Obama administration for 2 years. So there's been a lot in the press lately about the she economy. And what did you find out about this and how it relates to marriage and divorce?
Well, a lot of it's become fairly well known, so I can cover it, you know, pretty fast and move on to the stuff that's maybe less well known. But this is definitely a major trend. I mean, women are basically out-achieving men in a whole wide variety of benchmarks all across the board. They're earning more college and graduate degrees. Their salaries are rising faster. 61% of wives are working now versus only about 30% in 1960. So things are really changing pretty fast. What you've got is a situation where, you know, women now own a third of all companies, the third of all marriages, the wife is better educated than the husband. They're the main breadwinner in 22% of all U.S. households. So this is a real game changer. I mean, all of a sudden, a woman who, you know, had previously in the June Cleaver days had to stay in a marriage because that was her source of financial support and her social support. And if you left a marriage, you were deemed to be a pariah. All that's totally changed. Women are now deliberately staying single. They're jettisoning husbands that don't measure up. They're 40% of all kids born out of born in the U.S. now are born out of wedlock, and fully 50% of kids born to women under 30 are out of wedlock. So, you know, women are doing everything from their job to child rearing by themselves. And you know, some of them just don't want guys hanging around, I guess. I see that in my divorce practice. A lot of women getting divorced, from seemingly normal, acceptable husbands, but they don't give any real reason for it other than they'd just rather be by themselves or with their girlfriend rather than with this guy or any guy for that matter. So it's a real game changer.
And you also have a statistic that's pretty interesting that I've seen other places, and it is this: based on average wage calculations for services rendered, fatherly duties are valued at $20,248, whereas maternal labors are valued at $60,182. So 20,000 versus 60,000. These would be...
Women are worth three times as much, and I know a lot of women that would say it's four times as much, but we'll go with three.
See, I think men would be more valuable to women if they were... We're going to jump ahead a little bit, but still not, really. If they would be skilled, loving, sexual partners, because... The best way that a stressed out, high-powered woman can relax and have a good time is by making love, by having sex, by having orgasms. And a lot of these guys are watching too much porn and they're not involved enough. But again, we're jumping ahead. We'll cover this a little bit more. But, you know, it's too bad, I think, my bias, but when women just discard men so easily.
The fact of the matter is they do. It's pretty amazing. Here's a couple of statistics that will really shock probably your listeners of both genders. 36% of women surveyed said they would not marry their same husbands again, whereas only 12% of married men admitted they'd picked the wrong wife. And perhaps the most shocking statistic of all, 30% of American women who are now married do not intend to be with the man they're currently with 5 years from now. So, like,
yeah.
I say, the gals are jettisoning the guys at a pretty rapid rate.
And actually, I'm seeing, I have in my, among my clients, a woman who fits into that category exactly. She's very well educated. She has a very high power job. And part of it, her stated goal was to figure out how to stay three more years with a guy for the sake of the child, and then she's gone. So
yeah, well, you know, how many clients have we both got that are staying together for the benefit of the kids? I mean, that's huge.
Right. But, I mean, it's very, I mean, she's very clear, you know, and she's a very successful woman, but clear about her goals. But of course, as a sex therapist and as somebody who's realizes how really great sex can be, you know, I do have this bias. I think couples would, I mean, just they would be so much happier. But anyway, let's not digress too much until we get to the porn part.
I knew you'd want to get to the porn.
No, but let's get to cohabitation first.
Well, cohabitation's, you know, kind of a, again, we can cover this one pretty quickly because everybody sort of heard this statistic and this story, which is that basically in many, if not most, Western societies, there's this increasing preference for dramatically delaying marriage and or to opt for cohabitation instead of legal marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So the age of first-time marriages, you know, if and when they marry at all, is rising really, really rapidly. I mean, we all know, I mean, you know, in years in my generation, you know, you got out of college and you got married, or at least if you wanted to have sex, you had to get married. So, I mean, everybody was getting married. In 1970, the average age for first marriages was 21 for gals and 23 for guys. Now it's up to 28 for men and 26 for women, which is the oldest age for first marriages ever in American history.
Ever.
Amazing.
Yes,
and, you know,
yes.
Many folks, again, not getting married at all, preferring to just live together, you know, often indefinitely, often having, you know, having kids, but not having having anybody pronounce them man and wife. So it's pretty amazing, right? Right. Again, in the early 60s, 5 to 10% of all marriages were preceded by cohabitation. It just, you know, was frowned upon. It wasn't cool. You know, that's totally changed. You know, by the time you get to the 1990s, it's up to, you know, 60% being preceded by cohabitation, which probably makes a certain amount of sense. I think it's a good idea to try living together before you get married. But, you know, everybody else has obviously, bought that approach, and some of them are just staying living together without getting married. So it's a major, major change.
Well, don't you
think
that...
Right now, we've got go ahead.
I just wondered about... I think that some of these young people who are deciding to cohabitate might have grown up in a family where the parents divorced and they witnessed the bitterness of that and the fallout of that. And so they're gun shy about marriage anyway.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
They're more accustomed to seeing divorce and more cynical. And more specific in their needs. And like I say, there's an awful lot of, I mean, a lot of these trends tie in together.
Sure.
Because there's so many more options for these young kids nowadays than there used to be. I mean, you know, we just came out of the chute and did what we were told. And like I say, if you wanted to have sex, you got married. So,
well, wait a minute.
Definitely
some
changed.
Of us did as we were told.
you've always been an outside the dots kind of gal.
Well, not always, but I'm thinking about you too. As friends, we've shared some of our early histories. Anyway,
yeah,
not
you're
to be
right.
broadcast
you're right.
on the air.
But... I'll plead guilty to that.
But part of your charm, Bradley Coates, is that you've been a wild man. You still can be a wild man. A wild man in terms of being spontaneous and funny and having a good time, being able to play. And, a lot of people can't play very well. You know, I have found, well, we're going to jump ahead again to sex a little bit, but for so many people that I see in my practice, that simply having fun together is crucial to keeping the sex drive alive. You know, because desire isn't just something we passively feel when everything's going right. It develops in direct response to what we do. So you got to play. You got to have fun. And, the last time Brian, my partner, and I were in Hawaii, you and your wife, Sachi, and anyway, we played some. It was really, really good, really fun.
Well, that's the key to relationships. But when we get to the porn situation, we'll see that a lot of people are, quote, playing or playing with themselves or whatever you want to call it, solitary sex. They've gone into totally separate orbits, which is again fairly scary. But let me point out the fact that as we talked about the cohabitation. This has really changed dramatically. You have a situation now where it used to be, you know, say in 1970s, 75% of all U.S. adults are married. By the year 2000, only 56% of American adults are married. And by the time of the 2010 census, only 48% of all U.S. households are comprised of married couples. For the first time in American history, that figure's dropped below 50%, now leaving married couples in the minority. That, you know, again, talk about major game changers.
That's huge. That's really huge. And it could impact...
2010 census really shined a lot of light on a lot of this stuff.
The 2010 census, yeah.
Yeah.
At this rate, 20 years from now, we may not have as many divorce lawyers.
God forbid. Say it's not so. I'm not going to be around anyway, but yeah, it could be a changing changing world for sure.
Oh yeah. Well,
so that
sort of covers
I'm just trying to keep a little bit of track of time here. That sort of covers cohabitation. I mean, we all know that that's what's happening. These kids are just living together instead of getting married. Even more, you know, a lot of times these young kids, they don't even date the way we did. I mean, I remember when I was like in eighth grade, you know, I was getting a corsage and a dinner jacket. I don't know what an eighth grader is doing in a dinner jacket, and going to the winter prom with a real date. And now I've got, you know, my nieces and nephews. They're 23, 24 years old. They've hung out en masse with, you know, a bunch of guys, bunch of gals, kind of interfacing somehow, but not ever pairing off in any kind of courtship thing. And they, you know, they almost just don't date. They just sort of hang.
So I know.
It's a whole different, like I say, it's a whole different deal.
Well, I'm such a romantic that I think it's too bad. I think that there can be great value in courting, dating, getting to know each other, and learning good manners en route.
Yeah, like, true story.
Yeah. Well, let's go into the social media and the internet, where a lot of good manners are not showing up, actually.
Oh, unbelievable.
Yeah. You talk about how cheating, well, that's also jumping ahead a little bit for what we were going to talk about.
Well, not too
but
far.
Even,
I mean,
yeah, but even but cheating and even being found out is because of all of the social media. But let's start out with you talk about two key factors of mate choice have always been proximity and timing. And proximity is, of course, with the internet now worldwide, and timing is immediate. And as my listeners know, and as you know, Brad, Brian and I met on Match.com over 20 months ago, and it's estimated that 35% of all new relationships start up via the internet. What else did you find in your research for your fourth edition of Divorce with Decency?
Well, what you're saying is exactly right. And when you think about what the impact of that is, I mean, when you think of the proximity and the timing, I mean, proximate meant you had to, you know, be a bridesmaid in somebody's wedding and meet their new spouse's groomsmen. And, you know, maybe, you know, that was a marriage. Weddings were always a good place to meet people, singles bars, whatever, you know, whatever. But, you know, there had to be some physical meeting somehow, live and in person. Nowadays, of course, that's totally taken out of the equation. You just meet over the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the timing, it used to be that if you met somebody, and, you know, she could have been the love of your life, but if, you know, if she was already in a relationship, the timing is wrong, you were screwed, or weren't screwed, as the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened is relationships used to center on that, but now you've got a situation where basically the proximity is worldwide, the timing is instantaneous, so as soon as you're done with one relationship, you can jump in, you know, you just go back online, find another one. So the opportunity cost of giving up on any one potential suitor is much lower, given the exponentially expanded numbers of more easily available prospective other new mates that you could grab. So what's the result of that? Well, it works in favor of shorter-term revolving relationships instead of longer-term, more seriously committed ones. I mean, it changes people's whole mental approach to how they go into relationships with this digital dating landscape. The last sweeping social change of this significance was really the introduction of the birth control pill. I mean, as far as giving people that many more options, I mean, exponentially expanded options. It's crazy.
Well, I just, yes, I want to comment a little bit because with internet dating, there is this expectations trap having to do with perfection. If there's one thing that most explicitly detracts from the enjoyment of relationships today, I have found that it's an abundance of choice. You know, we psychologists type call it an excess of choice, the tyranny of abundance. You know, we see it as a measurement of our autonomy, and we firmly believe that freedom of choice will lead to fulfillment. But it is often very confusing. I have a single, attractive, financially successful son in New York City who talks about this. There are too many choices.
That's pretty funny. That's interesting.
Yeah.
And undoubtedly totally true.
Yeah. But now you also talk, though, about the Internet. 20% of all current divorces are somehow tied in to the end, not just the startup, but the end. Oh, we have to.
Oh, yeah. It makes it easier.
Wait, hold it, Brad, because we're coming up to the half-hour break. So
okay.
We have to
I'll
end the half-hour break. We'll come back and we'll talk about the end and even cheating via AshleyMadison.com. And then we're going to segue into pornography and its impacts. So, yeah, the listeners will certainly want to stay tuned. We'll
stay
be right back.
Stay tuned for porn.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll be right back. Thank you.
Se ti perderai nel labirinto di un amaro autore. Mai tuoi piedi, mai tuoi piedi,
we are back. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. We've got Bradley Coates with us today. We are talking about, well, he has the fourth edition of his award-winning book, Divorce with Decency, out, and just out, the fourth edition. And so he's expanded the book to include a lot of new trends, and so that's what we've been discussing. And we are about to move into, well, cheating, AshleyMadison.com, caught cheating through Facebook. Maybe that's enough to say about that. Let's just move right into pornography, because that's such a big topic. You okay with that, Bradley?
Am I okay with pornography? Yes.
I mean, are you okay with me being the dominant here and suggesting that?
I'm not quite so sure that I'm okay with some of the spin-off results of pornography. What it's doing to relationships is a little spooky. Let me start by just talking about some of the shocking statistics as to porn's prevalence in modern day society. I mean, you've got experts guesstimate that somewhere between $60 and $96 billion in porn revenues are circling around the world worldwide. $12 billion of it in the U.S. $3 billion of it related to internet porn. 25% of all internet search engine requests are porn related. 8% of total emails are porn related. 12% of total websites are pornographic. I mean, it's an explosion of pornography. And what that tends to do, especially to guys, I think, is to dramatically alter men's sexual behavior towards women, probably for the worse, since they tend to start now treating women as objects, and ultimately altering the very nature of male-female sexual relationships, not to mention all other aspects of the interpersonal relationship between spouses. So,
yeah,
Brad,
I just want to comment on that, because it is true. I have a good friend, Candida Royale, Candice, and back in 1984, she was the first woman producer, director, writer of erotic, as she prefers to call them, films for couples and female-centered erotica. And she and a colleague of mine, early on, colleague being Sandra Cole, former president of ASECT, American Association for Sex Educators, Counselors, and Teachers, and she, Candice, and Sandra Cole talked about how her films could, very in a subtle way, educate men to please women. And that they discussed, this is going back 20 years ago, how guys who never talk about what they're doing with their partners, don't even know their partners aren't satisfied, that they can learn from these films, and maybe these are sort of more educational in the way that they're female centered, and a lot of us in the sex therapy business do, and I've narrated a number of sex ed videos, And the films demonstrate techniques and how to take time. And people used to believe that it was really important for both to come simultaneously and all of the kind of stuff which makes people dysfunctional in the first place. Well, now we've got porn making it even worse. And I've seen in my practice so many guys, some of them are even rendered impotent or they have erectile dysfunction. There's even some evidence that the brain changes from excessive pornography viewing. You talk about unrealistic expectations. I just talked a little bit about that. What else did you find, like with the fantasy fetishes and that sort of thing?
Well, I want to go back and play on your I'll play off of what you were saying. I mean, I think the original idea of maybe porn being a way of educating, you know, men, better educating men how to please their women and vice versa, women how to please men, you know, that's probably a good thing. The bigger problem is that you've got a situation now where porn seems to be having the effect of educating men on how to please themselves. We're talking masturbation going up like several 100%. I mean, it used to be that if you wanted to go get a porn video, you had to sneak it out in a brown paper wrapper under, it was sleazy. You bought it, put it in under your trench coat and went to one of these porn stores and that obviously limited its disbursement. Now you've got porn on every computer, every smartphone, every iPad. I mean, you can put porn on anything, and it makes it instantly available. And the problem with that, when you talk about these, you know, unrealistic sexpectations, which I think is kind of a cute term, is that now you've got a situation where anybody with a smartphone can basically order up, you know, personally customized, including extreme and or perverted sexual desires, to be delivered by pumped-up professionals. This is a quote from my book, pumped-up professionals aided by silicon, steroids, and sexual skill sets beyond the capabilities of most mere mortals. How long does it take before the fantasy fetishes replace and drastically diminish real human relationships? And that is a serious issue. If you've got a situation like you undoubtedly deal with as a sex therapist all the time where, you know, sex is getting, you know, the woman's menopausal, maybe she's not quite as liquid as she used to be, maybe the guy's not quite as erect as he used to be, maybe lots of things, or maybe they're just, you know, 20 years later, they just, it's lost a little of its oomph. But as it starts to get, you know, a little trickier to approach your mate for about sex for a variety of reasons, and then meanwhile you can just go back into your back room. And as a divorce lawyer, I see this all the time. My husband spends, you know, he comes home, he has dinner, he goes back into his office, he locks the door, and he sits there and, quote, works on his computer. And when I come in, he slams the lid on the iPad shut and sits bolt upright. What's really going on is that people are a 60-year-old guy is suddenly able to have, a 21-year-old, beautiful 21-year-old girl, that fits his exact, you know, I mean, do I want her to be black? Do I want her to be Asian? Come to think of it, why don't I have one of each? And come to think of it, why don't I have three instead of two? And why don't I, you know, touch this, suck that? You know, I mean, Jesus. I mean, all of a sudden you can just customize the order up the sexual skill sets that you want. And that definitely changes your whole outlook on then, you know, how much fun is it to go back and, you know, have to sort of elbow your way around with your mate and it just doesn't feel the same and maybe you can't get it going at all and holy shoot. I mean,
and
you know, before
it's a lot more work.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. To actually have to talk to somebody, you know, instead of just, you know, looking at the video screen. So it's definitely changing the nature of male-female relationships across the board.
Yeah, you write that porn can quickly become addictive and isolating, and there is a tendency of the Internet to encourage solitary sex. It's easier for them to retreat than to deal with a normal relationship. I've seen this for years, even before this proliferation of pornography. Even just to digress a little bit, I've worked with a number of women who are anorgasmic, and some of them also have eating disorders. So they'll say, you know, it's so much easier to have, try to have an orgasm or even have one with eating chocolate. I don't have to take a shower for it. I don't have to have a conversation. I can get out my vibrator. So this is the female side of things. But it's so much richness is lost, of course, in relationships and the sexuality that can occur, that can even, when it's really good, go to ecstasy at times. You talk about Dr. Bob Arnett in your work, this new condition.
Yeah,
I was talk about that because I was fascinated by it.
Well,
sexual attention deficit disorder.
He's come up with, what he calls sexual attention deficit disorder, the anagram being SAD, S-A-D-D. And his theory is that men who watch too much porn run the risk of losing their ability to perform in real life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's undoubtedly true. I mean, porn triggers feelings of self-centeredness. It causes you more to care about your own pleasure than that of your partner. And before long, you've got the situation where virtual sex begins to replace real-time romance. I mean, personally, I still prefer having sex with a partner. And I like the whole communication aspect of it that goes with it. But, you know, if that's becoming strained, I can imagine how people prefer having sex with themselves. And that's kind of, like I say, a spooky trend because now it's just so ubiquitous in society. I mean, there's just unbelievable amounts of this stuff going on. You saw the statistics I gave earlier. It's amazing.
Well, and even the ones you gave in this part of it, that 20 million U.S. adults regularly visit internet pornography websites. And then you ask, and I'd like you to expand on this if you can, Bradley Coates, how long will it take before virtual sex replaces real-time romance?
Well, that's the truth. I mean, women file for 2/3 of all divorces, both in Hawaii and nationwide. It's not a 50-50 deal. If people are going to bail out of marriages, it's usually going to be the wahine that's going to trigger it. Guys are just kind of complacent. They sort of, as long as they're still getting fed their 3 square meals a day and they've got, they're watching the E-SPAN and their Lazy Boy Lounger, even if they're not real happy, they stay put. Whereas women, you know, they want funny little things like communication and, you know, all these different add-ons that guys are not great at. And if you get that situation starting to happen and guys who are not great at real-time romance skills to begin with start to cocoon up even more, this is not going to be good.
No, and maybe this, Brad, is a good segue into your other trend on gray divorces as you know, and as some of my listeners know, I'm a gerontologist, and I've been studying aging and sexuality for years and had a couple of research articles published in medical journals. But anyway, so I'm very interested in this. You say that the number of divorces for folks over 50 has doubled within the last 20 years.
Yeah,
doubled.
That's right. Yeah. No, it's...
And how do you account for this?
Well, there's a couple of factors. You know, you've got a lot of people who have, by the time they're baby boomers, by the time they're 50, they're on their second marriage rather than their first, a lot of them.
Yeah.
And second marriages are notoriously riskier than first marriages. The re-divorce, here's the statistic that sticks in my mind. 45% of all first marriages end in divorce, 65% of all second marriages end in divorce, and fully 85% of all third marriages end in divorce. So the more, bottom line, the more you get used to getting divorced, you got the divorce lawyer's phone number programmed into your cell phone speed dial, and you've been through this a time or two, you know, you're quicker to pull the plug the next time. And so you've got a lot of second marriages for baby boomers. Plus, you've got baby boomers now hoping to live till, you know, 80, 85 years old. And many of them will.
And then you've got stepchildren, Bradley. You've got stepchildren. They're a huge factor in the remarriage especially
they're the single biggest cause of divorce in second marriages or remarriages is stepkids from a first marriage.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you've got almost like Margaret Mead almost, you know, was the first to posit this decades ago that as lifespans elongate, you almost feel like you need a different partner for each stage of a now longer lifespan. So
mm-hmm.
It used to be that, you know, everybody dropped dead right around 50, you know, the kids were barely out of the house and, you know, even then you're in their old age home anyway. So there wasn't a lot of time to have to be introspective about, okay, what do I want to do with the second half of my life? Well, you know, now you got potentially, you know, 3 or 4 decades left after the kids are gone, and a lot of people are saying, well, and you know, I just want to do something different with that. I'm done with he, she, or it, and I want to be, you know, by myself, or I want to be with somebody new, or whatever.
For a lot of women,
they'd almost rather be by themselves than to be with a guy in later ages. I'm finding that to be true a lot of the time.
Well, these statistics show that women live longer if they're in a good marriage. Men live longer if they're married, whether or not it's good.
That's correct.
So,
marriage seems to be almost more beneficial for men than it is for women.
Yes, yes, and of course, I'm often talking with the couples in my practice about, hey, ideally, the empty nest should become the love nest. Now you have more time. Now you have more privacy. You don't have, you know, the kids knocking on your door and making all sorts of demands. And for some couples, it happens. For others, it doesn't. I did my PhD dissertation over 10 years ago now on older female sexuality. And what I found in the questionnaires was that if they were divorced or widowed and they had new partners, and their sexuality was all revved up again. Or, in some cases, with their long-term mates, with the privacy, and sometimes with counseling, a little plug for my profession, so they can spice up their love lives again, that it worked, especially without the kids being there. But a lot of couples are looking at each other, and if they haven't really developed their relationship well, they're looking at each other and say, who the hell are you? And what do we have to talk about? Oh, dear.
Yeah, yeah, and that's a problem.
Yeah.
And that is the gray divorce phenomenon. You know, what they're talking about here is basically, you know, gray-haired guys or gals over 50 getting divorced. And, you know, that's now one in every four Americans getting divorced is one of those gray-haired guys or gals over 50. So it's a big chunk. I mean, you know, it used to be like 1 in 10 as recently as a couple decades ago. This is all changing very, very fast. And speaking of very fast, I don't know how much time you've got left, but there is a sort of a combined effect of all this where the question really is beginning to arise, you know, whether or not there's the quote predicted end of marriage forthcoming, and that is, you know, that's kind of a surprising thing to even contemplate. It never even occurred to me. I've been in the divorce business for 34 years, but it never occurred to me that the marriage itself might be on the verge of becoming obsolete. But as you look at all these factors start to converge, you know, the older people getting divorced, the younger kids not getting married, the genders going their own separate ways, you know, back into their own dark rooms with their porn screens on anyway. And again, that's more men than women, but, you know, it's not unheard of for women either. You've got a lot of factors that are making it very, very difficult to stay married. So there's this sociologist that wrote one of the funniest books I've read in a long time, a guy named Charles Martel.
Oh, yeah.
who wrote a column called The End of Marriage,
mm-hmm.
and he makes some pretty compelling points. He says, the marriage rate, we talked about this, the marriage rate is declining in the U.S. and other Western countries. And by the way, this is not just an American phenomenon. This is happening all over all the Western developed nations.
Yeah.
1960, 66% of all 20-somethings were married, but only 26% were by 2008. Marriage on the decline amongst all groups, especially low-income couples. The interesting, there's the most dangerous kind of a situation for marriage is a lower income, lower educated kind of a couple. The higher the income and the higher education, the more likely people are to stay married. That's kind of a cause and effect one. Anyway, back to Mr. Martell.
Wait. Comment on that, Brad. That's interesting, and I've read that too. But what do you think are some of the causal factors for that?
I guess if you're smart enough to get a PhD or you graduate from college or get a master's or whatever, that you're probably smart enough to figure out that you don't want to go around dividing your net worth in half every few years, which is what happens when you get divorced. People who are better educated, maybe they come from the same, you know, sort of segments of society, sort of like the old arranged marriage kind of a phenomena, but with college being the marriage arranger. I don't know. I mean, you get married right out of high school to whoever is the first girl you get pregnant, and you're still in your 20s, and nobody's got any money, you got a lot to fight about, and not very many tools at your disposal to try and resolve things. Whereas
nor maturity.
Right, exactly. I mean, skill sets for, you know, even knowing how to converse and negotiate intelligently and the biggest problem is when people lose their temper and explode at one another. That's very hard to put back in the bottle, put the genie back in the bottle. If you've got a communication grid that says, okay, you know, let's talk, let's take a deep breath, let's work through this, as opposed to just, you know, screw you, the screw you is the first thing out of a lot of people's mouths. And again, the more younger and less educated you are, probably you got that problem, and that becomes your method of communication. So,
well, that's
not
right.
Good.
And then I will just add this, that some couples come in for sex therapy, but they're so angry with each other that they couldn't possibly have sex. So we have to do psychotherapy before I can do sex therapy, just to help them with communication.
Yeah, and that is an issue. But yeah, what you've got really is, like I say, this is across the board decline of marriage in all groups. I mean, rich people are getting divorced too, and you've got the rate of the decline sort of seemingly accelerating. Just between 2004 and 2006, the amount of the decline of the drop off in marriages has just started to plummet just within the last 5 or 6 years. It's been staggering. Some people say that the marriage rate's dropping like 5% a year, which I haven't been able to verify that. That seems a little steep, but there's no question but what it is dropping much faster than it ever has.
Shockingly to me, because of my private practice, but 23% of married American couples sleep in separate beds.
Yeah. Well, they need you. They need you to. They need you to.
Or they need
them up.
Or they need a snoring device.
And before the recession, all the home builders were basically starting to build these mega McMansions with separate suites for the male and the female. I mean, they were the new design for homes, if you could afford it. And this may be the way that people, it's in line with the way people would really probably prefer to live, is to have, you know, like you go to Europe and you visit the chateaus and the palaces in Europe, and you notice the king's suite is at one end of the building and the queen's suite's at the other end of the building. And, you know, they've got their whole separate suites and bedrooms. They were starting to design McMansions that way, with each of the genders having their own separate space. So it is not just separate beds, but entire separate wings of the house.
Uh-huh.
So it is definitely a kind of a bizarre phenomenon. Anyway, back to Mr. Martell.
Yes,
this
Mr.
End of
Martell,
Marriage article.
Yes.
He has gone so far as to predict that if the current trend continues, sometime between 2028 and 2034, the U.S. marriage rate will reach zero, which is almost unbelievable, and probably not an imminent threat, but
I think he is exaggerating, but who knows? You know, a lot of times people make points with exaggeration to make the point.
Right, right. But that's his article on the end of marriage, and he talks about some of the contributing factors that cause it. I mean, the gerontology gap of radically prolonged lifespans, which we talked about, the decline of religion, sort of there's apparently seems to be an overall decline of the people's religious affiliations across the board in the U.S. nowadays, and historically marriage is essentially a religious institution. Civil unions that were created mainly for homosexuals originally are now available to heterosexuals as well. And in Europe, where that's been an available option longer, civil unions are starting to become more popular than conventional marriage. So you've got a situation where the marital institution, which was generally viewed as being good for both the individuals involved and for society in general, and the preferred way to raise children and, you know, and get them off on the right track, that, you know, that part of the glue that holds society together may be in danger of coming apart, which would be strange. I mean, the statistics you were talking earlier about the fact that really people do, they amass more wealth if they're married, they live a healthier life if they can stay married, they have more longevity. There's a lot of pluses to being married if you're in the right marriage.
Now, Brad, I'm going to, Progressive Radio Network likes me to stop just a couple of minutes before the top of the hour. So
okay.
I would like to tell listeners that if they want to get your Divorce with Decency, it's now the fourth edition. It is an excellent book. They can go to Amazon.com. So it's Divorce with Decency, and it's Bradley Coates, Coates. And how else might they contact you, Brad, if they want to?
Well, the law firm I run in Honolulu is called Coates and Fry, and our phone number here is 808-524-4854, 808-524-4854. I've got my email address is bacoates@coatesandfry.com. And the book's going to be available this time, first time on Kindle, and, you know, all these e-books now, and on Amazon, of course, so... Yeah, this fourth edition of Divorce with Decency is the best one I've ever written. It is really, it's not just a book about divorce. It's about, all about relationships in general. I mean, people that are even thinking about getting married or going, even entering into a serious relationship or getting out of a relationship, divorce or otherwise. It really has everything from soup to nuts about the interpersonal aspects of romance and relationships.
Hey, thanks, Brad. It's the best book. Go and get it, listeners. And, Brad, we'll talk again soon. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks again for having me. Aloha.
Aloha.
Bye now.